Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown. I'm your host, Joe Oberle from VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePTSD.com. Joined each week by co-host Mark Craig from the Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. And speaking of Mark and the Star Tribune, Mark's going to his mock draft and all his prognostications are coming out in the paper tomorrow. This is being taped on Wednesday the 27th, the day before the NFL NFL draft. And Mark's going to lay out how it's going to go tomorrow, and he's going to predict the Vikings pick. And we're going to talk about that at the end of the show, so you got to stick around for that. So we have to see what Mark thinks the Vikings will do, because I think it's a crapshoot, so my picks are crap. So there you go. How about that?
I think all the picks are crap, but people love it. If my overall record was laid out in front of us, would not be good. All it takes is one domino, one trade, and it just kind of goes by the wayside. But it's a fun thing. People, for whatever, they must have short memories, because I'm still the Mach 1.0, and that's it. Whereas some people are up to 14, 15, whatever. If you were to like do a Google search, you'll see some 14s and 15s. And I imagine if you just take every possible combination and just mix it around.
I mean, then you can, as that's easy, they can say they're right. I mean, I know nobody comes back and says, oh, you said this and they did this, but there's no accountability for your mock or anybody else's. But so why is somebody doing 14? So they say, yeah, I nailed it on this one.
Did you ever hear of clicks?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, if you want clicks, just keep pumping them out there. If we only had more time to break down this draft, Joe, if we could just move it back a little. So, eventually we would have like the Vikings, they might take a punter or a kicker, or they might take like a long snapper in the first round. It's a possibility, but stay tuned.
This might be you have a few favorite days of the year in the NFL calendar. This has got to be probably one of them, because the speculation stops. Would I be wrong in that estimation?
Oh, it doesn't stop. I mean, it's cranking all the way up until, and this very well could happen. I mean, we've already seen when you don't have a quarterback that's the guy, like Trevor, even in a great quarterback class, Trevor Lawrence was the guy. There was kind of no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I think the Jaguars might have even said that was the guy. This year now you got, Aiden Hutchinson for months and months and months appeared to be the number one guy, sprinkled in there with the guy from the NC State, the offensive tackle. Well, now it's looking like the kid from Georgia, the edge rusher from Georgia will be number one. So maybe it's right. Maybe it's just this never ending. Let's just cram it. Let's get as much of speculation and talk as we can. Sort of like you and I are doing right now.
Right.
Until we get up to kickoff I took a look for Friday's paper off of Thursday night. I sort of have freedom because we have guys that chase the news and do a great job with that. So I'm looking at how the draft used to be, talking to Bud Grant about when he was drafted in 1950.
Nice.
And then their 1967 draft, where, Bud's first draft, where he comes in like a week before the draft, and Jim Finks is in the hospital. And they're making picks, just the three of these guys. And just compare it to how, tomorrow night I'll be at the, instead of watching TV at TCO, I'll be at US Bank Stadium, with the draft party. So just kind of how each and every year it's gotten bigger and bigger, which is hard to do when it's already massive.
It's amazing how it has grown. I mean, even in the 10 years that I was covering the team, I saw a girl come, certainly there were draft parties back then, but I came to realize that, well, maybe it's just a Minnesota thing because they're out of the playoffs before the season ended, but that season, that off season of draft speculation starts immediately and just rises to a fever pitch, almost like it's a season on and of itself, you go each week and win games and you try to figure out how the Vikings are going to get this draft business is, is out of hand. It's just nuts.
Well, it's become its own season. I mean, you know, for years the Browns don't have a first round pick until like 3000. They've given up three in a row. But for years, every single year, it was the Browns would take, the year that they got two or three picks in the first round, and one of them, they got their quarterback, Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn's your long-term quarterback, and they got another position, and they won the draft. They must have won two or three drafts in a row.
Just like the Cavaliers did.
He left and he came back. But yeah, they did. I mean, in NBA, you can become a great team just by getting that first pick. I mean, it's apples and oranges. The NBA draft, yeah, if you've got the first pick and it's a LeBron James year, that's all you need. I mean, I'd love to be a general manager in that situation. Who'd you take? LeBron James.
Right. And then, was it 1 or 2 years later, they got the pick overall again. They had that little kid in there, at the lottery where, the draft comes out. And it's like Cleveland had the first overall pick, wasn't it 2 or 3 years in a 5-year span?
There was a bunch of them, even going back to Brad Daugherty in maybe in the 90s.
You're old.
We're definitely old.
It is crazy business, and or I saw somebody online. Someone asked a question on Twitter before it became Elon Musk's Twitter. I must say, they said, "What is the best line you ever heard regarding the NFL draft?" And there was this clip of some guy saying, "So from the Colts, I must have been Irsay saying, who the hell is Mel Kiper?"
Oh yeah, that was the famous. That was like 91 or. Maybe 91, 92. Hats off to Mel Kiper. I respect Mel Kiper because he saw this. He and Joel Bushbaum, the late Joel Bushbaum, they saw this as something that even the league didn't see it as. There's stories about Pete Rozelle saying, to ESPN, like in 1980, saying, "You want to televise this? Are you sure?" Mel Kiper did it before the internet, and you bought his book, and he did the legwork on it, and so whenever people were writing stories, off the draft, we didn't know these guys, you didn't know very much about them until you got close to the draft. You did some draft stories, and then that's was your Bible, was the kind of the Mel Kiper's, just giving you numbers and stats and.
Yep.
Intel on these guys. Well, now the reason you have a billion mock drafts is because it starts with the Mel Kipers, and he's still Mel. Mel's still in the business and, as hot as ever. And then they bring in Todd McShay, probably to balance Mel out. Maybe it's their contracts are probably to where they kind of keep them in control. I don't know. But, he's the one that started it. He is among the group that started it and saw this for what it is. And
right.
I never would have believed it, but he was spot on and became a bazillionaire because of it.
I mean, you covered the NFL as well as the Vikings for the Star Tribune. And you have to do your one mock every year and you don't do a million of them, but I know you're from Cleveland and I OSU guy to a degree. Do you spend a lot of time in college ranks, grinding, watching film or watching a lot of college games? I know during the football NFL season, you're busy with that. And I could never do it. I could never sit there and know all these guys and, have to. But, to be perfectly honest, you don't have to anymore. You can just, a couple weeks before the draft, you can go online, start reading who these guys are and watch film if you want. But, I mean, was that a part of your – ritual? I mean,
if you like watching college football now, you see a lot of games and you there's a lot of games to see. There's a lot of highlights to watch. There's a lot of, I think if you just get caught up in looking at highlights, you're going to miss what guys really are. I'm still from the era where we talked to the experts. We didn't become the experts. We somewhere along the line, journalists eliminated the middleman and became the experts. You used to also get a little better information, from guys because it wasn't, if a guy said something, it wasn't boom. It was didn't appear before, you know, before you sat down in your chair. You know, I mean, we do interviews at TCO or wherever, where if we spend a minute talking to someone after the interview, it's already been processed and reprocessed and diced and sliced and torn up and put out there on us already. So it's a Kwesi calling me to see who I'm picking. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Kwesi, I can't take someone really good.
Well, yeah, I had that phone calls from Zim and you're getting them from Kwesi. That's pretty good. That shows you where we're at. Well, Mark, I do want to ask you a question in general about this year's draft and just, you know, and what reading and watching and talking and everything else I've been and listening and doing. It sounds like there's not a huge consensus near the top of the draft like there is in years past. Now, granted, the consensus can get blown out and has been blown out years past. You know, people say, oh, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. But there are plenty of drafts where we all know who's number one. You know, we all know there's number two. You know, this year the quarterbacks aren't that big a deal, so it's not that cut and dried. How would you assess this year's at least last Thursday night's first round, to, you know, in general, do you think there's going to be a lot of surprises because of that? Or are you finding some consensus there at the top that we can count on maybe?
Well, that's why I say, you know, now the consensus was Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan. Mm-hmm. He's the most polished guy, probably going to be the guy that's the best prospect, proven prospect. But now that Trayvon Walker has kind of entered the mix, supposedly, in Jacksonville, saying that, you know, Peter King, among others, saying that there could be a surprise at the top of the draft. You know, last year it was Trevor Lawrence, even though, well, it was Trevor Lawrence, I think, pretty much all the way through. But there was, you know, occasionally there was the, you know, or to do maybe with, like, the third pick last year with, like, the 49ers went up. Well, did they go up to get Mac Jones? Well, did they – no one thought that they would went up to get Trey Lance. And that was kind of a surprise, you know, at least until the draft started taking place and things started leaking out. But, you know, even like historically great number one picks, you know, Peyton Manning, I think if I remember correctly, was considered, you know, like it's probably going to be Peyton Manning, but it could have been Ryan Leaf. And it's like, who's going to go 1-2, 1-2? And he, you know, he had one of the best quarterbacks ever taken and one of the biggest busts ever. Right. Taken boom, boom, 10 minutes apart.
Crazy.
You know, in 2005, I think it was, or six, 2005, it was, is it going to be Aaron Rodgers or is it going to be Alex Smith? You know, I think my mock draft had Aaron Rodgers. I knew Aaron Rodgers was going to be a Hall of Famer. But Aaron Rodgers, my number one pick got taken at number 24, whereas Alex Smith gets picked number one.
So you were right. You were wrong on draft day, but you were right as the year.
Yeah. I totally nailed him as a, you know, a four-time, is it four now? Four-time MVP, you know, all nice. That stuff.
Well, you know, so it might be a little crazy tomorrow night, you know, with things that are unexpected. And I think it will be an actual, will make it a fun one to watch if not everything goes by the expectations. But perhaps one thing that we can count on happened this week. If you're crazy for Kwesi out there, and God, I'm glad I can be able to say that. I just had a, you know, dental procedure, so I still got some Novocaine in there. But he came out and did his pre-draft chat with the media, and he says, you know, the stats out there in the last 5 years, the Vikings traded for 21 draft picks in the sixth round or lower, which is a crazy, crazy stat. It sounds like, you know, when you look at that now, it's like, was that guy trying to make up for mistakes they already made? So they had to get more cracks at whatever was going on. We'll talk about that. But Kwesi said, there's no amount of seventh round picks that will equal the value of the fat first pick. And I think I speak for a lot of Minnesota Vikings fans that say, thank you, dear God, thank you, Kwesi, that we can expect it. You know, we can hopefully see the Vikings take somebody on Thursday night. And I know when I sat there and I would go out to TC over at Winter Park and watch, you know, have to cover these draft nights, I couldn't believe how many times I sat there and watched Rick Spielman trade out of that first pick or move around and then move back in. And it's like you start writing a story about what's happening and then it changes again. It's crazy, but maybe we can count on Kwesi, who may have thrown a little shade at old Rick, but he's not going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Rick ever traded out of the first round and got a bunch of seventh rounders. I don't think.
No, I know that.
That's the, you know, and this guy very well could trade down too because of where he's at and because of the fact that they, you know, they probably want to come out of there with a cornerback. And let's face it, the way things are going, the top two are going to be gone. So you'd be settling for the third corner at number 12 when maybe you can trade down and get to the third corner in the low teens or whatever. So that's not, I mean, this guy, because he said that doesn't mean that he won't trade down.
No.
An analytics guy probably is more likely to, I mean, the Browns, you know, we've kind of like, in the short time that Kwesi's been here, acting like the Browns were like the Steelers of the 70s when it came to drafting. I mean, the Browns haven't done anything super fantastic in the short brief time. I mean, they, you know, so, but they were a team that this was maybe when Barry was there the first time before he came back, you know, they were, you know, when they were trading down all the time. And so, you know, they're probably more likely to trade down with Kwesi looking at all this and taking all this information in. And a lot of what Kwesi says is kind of the same. He didn't say anything. He didn't reveal anything.
Right.
And neither did Rick. And Rick, you know, kind of took heat for it. Kwesi says it kind of has a way of saying nothing in a friendly, fancy way.
Sort of.
And I agree with him. I agree with a lot of things, you know, and, you know, he just has a very articulate way of explaining his point man role in this and taking all the information. Well, you know, Rick wasn't ruling from high on top either. He was taking in information as well. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. It's what we need, what needs to happen with this group is I like where they're at. I get a good feeling about these guys, but it's time, you know, I'm looking forward to them having a track record. And not this blank sheet where they can be perceived in any way whenever there's nothing behind them or, but you know, under their belt. Where, you know, here's what they did last year. Here's what they did 5 years ago. You know, Rick had a blind spot probably with the offensive linemen in those middle rounds, trying to get those guys in the third, fourth, fifth round, or getting linebackers late in the draft, or you know. Trading down and getting all those seventh round picks that may not have worked out. You know, what is going to be, you know, Kwesi's, you know, strengths and weaknesses, because he's going to have them. Everybody has the strengths and weaknesses.
We get to start checking that out very soon. Now, yes, I didn't mean to imply that Rick was trading out of the first round to go pick up seventh rounders, but he did trade some high middle rounders in his career and pick up sixth and seven rounders when you're just scratching your head when you think you're finally going to get a body. But he also traded out of the first round and then traded back in that famous year of Harrison Smith, who's the receiver he got, and he got a line.
Cordero
Patterson, yes.
He got Patterson, Sharif Floyd, I believe. And
Smith, yeah.
And which Smith. Was, you know, and so a lot awesome. Of
that was great.
Yeah, I mean – you know, that for a while when Rick was on top a little bit, you know, he was retelling the story of how he was given his press conference and they got word that they could get Harrison Smith. So he, you know, like Superman heading for the phone booth, you know, he charged off, you know, and that he was praised for that. And now, you know, we look at what, you know, they've taken how many corners in the top two rounds the past 5 years or whatever. Well, you know, they're, for different reasons, you know, Mike Hughes, they screwed up his neck, are diagnosing and treating his neck. And Jeff Gladney, they released him because of his off the field issues, which he was found innocent of and is now in Arizona. So, you know, they were taken and he took swings at the offensive line. Last year, I think people, you know, if Darrisaw stays healthy, people could be happy with, you know, the fact that they traded down, still got that left tackle yeah. that could be long term, and also gave him an extra swing in the third round, which they turned into Kellen Mond, which didn't work out last year. We're going to find out real quick what Kevin O'Connell really thinks about this guy. If they don't take a quarterback in those mid rounds, then that tells me that they think that there's something there with Kellen Mond. If you see a quarterback taken in the third round, that means that they don't think Kellen Mond's worth anything. So we'll find out, but I don't think the quarterback position is going to get addressed this year, obviously, as a starter. No. But they got to start, finding the exit strategy. Spielman tried to do that a little bit last year with Kellen Mond. But now we got a new regime. So see what they got to start putting together an exit strategy, unless Kirk wins the Super Bowl this year and then give him some more money. He will have earned it.
As Mark said, he's looking forward to a track record for Kwesi to see how he does. And that it'll allow us to quit looking back and we can start looking forward. So we're going to do that in the next segment, and we'll take a break right now and come back and talk some more draft talk. Stick around and make sure you see what Mark's going to say in his mock, because we've been waiting for that one mock. With one mock, it's all the more intense and powerful.
The pressure yeah. is on.
Exactly.
If I miss these, then it's not pretty.
So come on back to the Vikings Territory Breakdown. All right, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. I'm glad Mike took down the Vikings Territory bug that was in the middle of the screen, because I wasn't sure how I was going to get Mankato Brewery in there, but now I can.
There you go.
Screen to talk
there
about.
You go.
And I'll be drinking some tomorrow night during the draft for sure, and so you should as well. Mark, this week I saw – I'm just laughing because when I sent this to you, your response to it was pretty funny, but – I saw, according to PFF, the Vikings are not expected to pick up Garrett Bradbury's fifth-year option. And you said PFF and anybody with a brain thought that.
Half a brain. I'm also hearing that the Vikings – you have a little bit of receiver in your history, right?
Yes, I do.
The Vikings will not take Joe Oberle in the first round.
Man, I don't know. Good thing I get
– or the seventh. You're from Mankato though. Maybe you could be a free agent.
I could be. That's right. I could be undrafted or picked up. I got connections. I had a kid that went to MSU. It wasn't me, but we should. Anyway. All right. Well, yes, they're not. It's interesting news, and it's like you said, not unexpected, but it's going to shake up the Vikings and what they might do in this draft. They're going to have to be looking for some center people, at least to backfill and back up Garrett Bradbury, unless he has this phenomenal year that Kevin O'Connell predicted he could really work with him this year and figure out how to use him, saying that coach speak at, when he first came to town. What do you think this does, Mark? Because, you kind of hinted at a little bit earlier, the Vikings have taken plenty of hits at the line. Even though year after year, when I would do this podcast with Joe Johnson, he would complain about them not dressing the line. I did years ago, and then he took over in vehemence about this. But, behind cornerbacks, it was the second highest position they've drafted on the team, and they just have not succeeded very well with it. Now, granted, that's five positions on the line compared to two or maybe three in cornerback, but still they have taken their shots, and they're going to have to take another one now that eventually Garrett Bradbury might be gone.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, the potential is there, but they kept swinging. Then they finally got Brian O'Neill, Ezra Cleveland. And right now I would put Darrisaw in that success swing, because my biggest thing with him is
Brian
going to be, yeah. What I Go said, ahead. Brian O'Neill. Yeah,
I
Brian just, O'Neill.
Yeah, I would put Brian O'Neill.
I said Brian O'Neill. They got him, and they got Ezra Cleveland. I would say is a guy that when you're not talking about their position, they're a guy that's established and something that you succeeded in picking them. And Darrisaw is just an injury thing, but I think he's qualified to be a left tackle for years to come. So, you know, and Bradbury, they're still saying this kind of, our system will help him and all that stuff. You got to see that to believe it.
Yeah.
That's in the mix as you're looking at your however many picks they have. 8 picks is interior guy that has the ability to play center. And, you know, so certainly it's just definitely a make or break year for Bradbury, no question.
Yeah, and the linemen I see going in the first round, prognostications anyway, in mock drafts are tackles, and there's nobody talking about a center. So I wouldn't expect the Vikings to jump on anybody early is to replace him or play behind him while he finishes out his contract. But it's such an important position, and certainly I don't know where Kirk is. I mean, with Garrett Bradbury, and we love Kirk to have all his nice little security blankets and Sean Mannion and all these receivers and blah, blah, blah. We want it just perfect for Kirk so he can win. I think it's going to be a pretty important position to address, you know, now that this report has come out. So I don't know. Second, third, maybe fourth round, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, Kirk will be comfortable with anybody who's strong enough and stout enough to not have the Kenny Clarks of the world pick up his center and throw him at him, you know, that, or the Akeem Hicks of the world that blow up, either Mason Cole or Bradbury. You know, Bradbury might be a nice guy. They might be buddies. I have no idea. But what's going to make Kirk Cousins comfortable is having the front of that pocket, you know, where he can step up, because that's the only way Kirk Cousins is not, I'm sure someone will write about it in the training camp about Kirk going off script and all this stuff. Well, Kirk doesn't go off script. Kirk needs a pocket. Kirk needs, he's got the arm strength. He's got the ability, the accuracy to find a receiver, but he needs a pocket, and that's what you got to give.
How much would you assess the lack of success or the lack of success for Kirk and the lack of protection for him on Garrett Bradbury? I mean, we certainly saw those plays, you know, over and over again online where that you just described when Kenny Clark picked him up and threw him back at the quarterback. But is this the right move to kind of just start moving away from him? Has his tenure been that down? You know, certainly people are down on him, but
I don't think he's because you can't fix everything in 1 year. So you've got to, there's certain things that you got to look at and say, okay, this guy just needs to get better. He needs to get better, but he's also been saddled. That right guard position has been so unsettled and not, that's the bigger, that if you have to look at the issues, the bigger issue is the right guard position. I mean, we thought Ole was going to be a guy that could do that because he's as big as a tackle. We thought that he might be quick enough as a guard, but he reaches and grabs too much, and which tells you that they're moving a little too quick for him inside like that. So I don't know that he's obviously not the answer, because they went out and got two more guys that can compete there. We'll find out. This one guy that's got 72 starts from Miami, he comes in there and help that a better right guard is going to help Bradbury be a better center, just because the nature of that position has to be, you know, it literally, it's the old cliche, it's your strong as your weakest link. And so you've got to have that across the board there.
I would think one of those two positions is going to be grabbed in the second, third round. Am I reaching with that prediction? That's about as much as I have to say. What either center or a guard of the future that
it really depends on what they end up taking in that first round. You know, I'm not, I mean, cornerback would be the spot if it's a perfect world and Stingley drops to him. And,
yeah,
you know, we all, you know, he's reunited with his position coach from LSU. He's got Patrick Peterson mentoring him. He's a great talent, but I think he's just too good to be there at 12, and I don't see him going up to get him.
I saw it right before we got on, I saw someone say he's expected now to go number three, Stingley.
that could be, you know, Houston is number three. We don't know what Houston's going to do. Houston could do anything.
Right.
I mean, their roster is a disaster, and they're not the best run organization in the world. They could do anything, but that's not saying that would be a mistake to go three. I think he's going to be, I'll tell you where I think he's going, but he's, if you look at him, only question about him is his foot. And just, you know, the fact that he hasn't played the last 2 years, but when you look at, you know, physically what he's doing now, his workouts, you know, what he's capable of doing when LSU was winning a national championship. I mean, he's a hard guy to overlook. And I would take him ahead. I mean, you know, famous last words, we don't know. I mean, it's like you said, it's a crapshoot, but I'd take him over the guy from Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be wild. Well, let's take another quick break, and maybe my Novocaine will completely go away by then, and we'll come back. And there's some other buzz that just keeps permeating. About the Vikings potentially taking a wide receiver at number 12, and I know that you kind of balked at that early on. Of course, we may find out that's not how do you think now. Who knows? But we're going to come back in the next segment, talk a little bit about that, and then we'll eventually get to Mark's mock draft. So stick around for that, and come on back. Thanks. All right, welcome back to this pre-draft Vikings territory breakdown with myself and Mark Craig. Mark, more news from the Kwesi presser. He talked about his wide receivers coach, Keenan McCardell, who came in and started lobbying for a non-wide receiver at that first-round position. I mean, first of all, something like that is totally amazing. You know, that a coach or assistant coach would do that. Second of all, Kwesi took the the opportunity to say, it's not about my decision. It's about us. It's about we, you know, and came out there and waved that flag, which, you know, was probably a good move by him. But it's crazy to hear that someone would say that. Now, I personally feel that a wide receiver, that position is not needed because it's a deep wide receiver draft. You can always get a good wide receiver later. And the Vikings are pretty good at that position right now. But let me just get off my soapbox here and say, Mark, what was your reaction to that comment from Keenan?
I don't know. I think that was his way of illustrating that they're all, you know, it's a collaboration and they're all in this as a team and everything. I don't know. I got the impression it was from, like, they had a mock draft going and they were going through their different scenario of mock drafts. And when it came to their pick, you know, I don't think Kwesi said, you know, how many receivers had been taken before that and who the receiver was and who the guy that Keenan McCardell wanted. So to me, if it's like, you know, Derek Stingley or the fourth receiver, you know, I guess a little more context would have helped, but yeah, yeah. It'd be unusual for a position coach to stand on the table and pound the table for someone else. But it doesn't shock me if it's a no brainer, if it's like, you know, who do you take? Say Aiden Hutchinson drops to 12, and who do you take, him or, you know, the fourth receiver? You know,
yeah.
If I'm the receivers coach, I'm gonna go, I think I'd take Aiden Hutchinson. You know,
it was a unique thing I'd ever heard before, because usually you probably want your coaches advocating to bolster their position because that helps them. You know, as the coach, you know, maybe if you got better talent, you can always do better. But it was kind of fun.
Hey, Keenan survived the nuclear explosion after the season. He was a he and just how many of one or there weren't many that survived the the only thing that's maybe keeping you from being a complete 180 from last year is maybe Keenan McCardell and I don't know, that's about it, you know. Yeah, so because and he's got Justin Jefferson, but as far as you know, the thought of a receiver, it's not ludicrous. It's not, I mean, I think I got seven receivers going in the first round, but none of them
really,
none of them in the top 10. So there's going to, when you get to about where the Vikings, I think when you get to about where the Vikings are going to start picking, where like the Washington and then the Vikings, you're going to see a lot of teams that, you know, it's a need for a lot of teams, but a great, you know, young, cheap receiver, because we've seen the price tag on receivers go through the roof now. It's almost becoming like a quarterback situation where you want to get a young, cheap receiver who's going to be great for 4 years before you have to pay him. Because, all right, now they're having to pay and overpay probably based on his age, Adam Thielen. Now, Thielen's on the books for – I'm not a cap guy, but is on the books for like $19 million next year or something like that for a cap number. That's going to be too big.
Yeah.
Justin Jefferson is coming up on a, you know, back up the Brinks truck on him. So, you know, this could be a pick that's made, you know, a little bit with this year in mind, because, you know, KJ Osborne is not the world's greatest number three receiver. He, you know, so he did a fantastic job. No, he's not bad at all. But I'm saying if you can get it, say it's receivers, he stands out above all other positions. It's, you know, you got your receiver on your board up here. And your corner down here, I would take the receiver, and because you know Thielen's going to be moving on relatively soon, and Justin Jefferson is going to be making a boatload of money pretty soon. And if you can get a number one pick that comes in and plays alongside Justin Jefferson long term, and Thielen and Jefferson for the near future, that's pretty good. So
well, you also
it's not out of the question.
You also got Irv Smith coming back. And like you said, how many times on this podcast there's only one football? And how many of them are going to be happy if they're not, you know, getting the football thrown to them enough? You know, with
Irv Smith is another guy that's in his last year of his contract. So you're looking at, you know, you're not just looking at this year, especially if you're, you know, there. This is not like last year. I mean, that regime knew that the moves they had to make had to be for this year, which is probably why Zimmer is so pissed about having Kellen Mond, because he needed help right now. And Kellen Mond was not going to help him right now. He was a pretty high pick. So, you know, this regime has a certain, a lot more grace period. So you could see a lot of different things. You could see, you might have mentioned him, the receiver from Alabama that tore his ACL in the national championship game. Could be, say he's a guy that doesn't play this year or doesn't play till late, you know, and he's here for next. He's here for 2023, and Thielen moves on or whatever, however they work that out. Suddenly that looks like a great pick.
That's
you don't know.
I didn't even realize that, you know, when I meant threw his name out there, Jameson Williams, but I didn't realize that he would possibly, you know, well then you are planning for ahead. You're not planning for now. And I'm speaking for Vikings fans. I would say the heck with that. That's Rob Baczynski's problem. You know, give me the best player available this year. And let's take this competitive rebuild and take back the North and get in the playoffs.
What if the best player available truly is a receiver? I mean, then you take a receiver. You know, it's if you want a corner just to have the two the initials next to the name, yeah. Then if he's not worthy of the 12th pick and you can't trade down, then I would rather have the great player than the good player that fits a hole right now.
I would too. Yeah, and you know, suddenly if Williams is damaged goods, he slides down in my book, because there's too many other receivers that maybe it could help you sooner. But I wanted to ask you this question. It's probably kind of I don't know, either obvious or dumb or whatever, but it has to do with the idea of somebody dropping down that you didn't expect. And it's something that maybe we could see happen in this first round. I mean, the Vikings have their board. They've got their ideas. They know their needs. They've got their players ranked. They've done, apparently they've done their own mock draft. And suddenly somebody drops way down the board for what reason or the other. We certainly know about Randy Moss in 1998 when all of a sudden he was still there at 19 or 20, and Danny Green jumped on it, you know, because his problems off field, you know, made him drop, and he made everybody else in the NFL pay. Or Justin Jefferson was there, a pick, you know, the Eagles took Rager in front of him. And you probably have seen that thing online where Zimmer and Spielman are giddy as hell because he's there. So suddenly it looks like, you know, you got your plan and all of a sudden this happens and then you got to jump. The reason for asking all this, I mean, I'm sure people do that. They have to do that. If suddenly a can't miss player is in your lap, you have to take them no matter what your needs are or what your plan is. But what about if someone like Malik Willis drops down, quarterback drops all the way down to 12? And I've seen a couple places this morning where the Vikings have been, slotted to grab him because he did. That would certainly tell you, as you said earlier about what's his name, Kellen Mond, we wouldn't know about him. But do you think that to me would not be such a cut dry? Okay, this guy dropped, we got to grab him. You know, somehow.
Well, no, I mean, there's no quarterback. I mean, Malik Willis has also been. Tab to go to Pittsburgh at 20, or Kenny Pickett to Pittsburgh at 20. Believe me, there's no quarterback that's good enough that's like a surefire top 10 quarterback that they haven't thought about. That wouldn't be a surprise to them. If they want a quarterback, they're prepared to take one of those guys, because what do you do if Trevor Lawrence falls, or what do you do if even Zach Wilson falls? You know, these are guys that very well could be there at 12. In fact, a lot of people, I think, have them still being there at 12. I just feel that the way that this league is when it comes to quarterbacks, every year we say, you know, when the quarterback position is not great, we say, well, there's probably not going to be any quarterbacks go high. And then you see all hell break loose and you see Mitch Trubisky going two, and, you know, based on 14 games at North Carolina and stuff like that, happens all the time. Christian Ponder. So
I'm asking the question. I mean,
yeah. What I'm saying is that, you know, it wouldn't be out of the question that the quarterbacks that are available now could be there at 12. So they've already done their due diligence on that stuff. I think, you know, and I've written stories. I've written the, you know, everybody's recap on Randy Moss and whatever anniversaries it was, or when he went into the Hall of Fame. And they never thought that until draft day, basically. They didn't think that Randy Moss, there was any way, shape, or form that Randy Moss would be there at 20 or 21 or whatever it was. And then, like, Brian Billick is, you know, famously said, you know, Denny came down the hallway and poked his head in my office and said, I think we're going to get Randy Moss. And then, you know, Brian Billick said, out, you know, Denny, what have you been smoking? Which is one reason why Randy, I think, fell, was because of questions about his off the field stuff and all, you know, the physical stuff. And, and Percy Harvin was the same way. You know, yeah. Percy Harvin wasn't expected to be there. Adrian Peterson in 2007.
Yeah.
You know, that's a perfect example of, you know, the Vikings were at number seven. Didn't think Peterson would be there. They had the running back, number 19. The running back the year before.
Yeah.
From Toledo. Drawing a blank on his name. But he had had 1,200 yards and was had a fantastic season. But running back was like a position like, no, they're not going to take running back. Well, Adrian Peterson was still there. And it's like, holy crap, Adrian Peterson is still there. And there was questions about his health, his durability, his shoulder, all these problems that he'd had. But, you know, they just, you know, Spielman, they were looking at him going, you know, this is a generational type running back. We're taking him. So yeah, if there is a special player like that, I don't know that this draft has that.
Yeah,
and
Willis is probably not it. But
no, he's not.
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm saying that if it's one of the edge rushers like if Trayvon Walker slides, or you know, Hutchins is not going to slide, but say he did for some reason, then it's like, I think they'd be prepared to, like, you know, hey, throw this stuff out the window. We're taking that guy. It's going to be interesting for them, because I personally think there'll be two quarterbacks taken in the top eight or whatever. So the more quarterbacks that get taken, that pushes down, where it doesn't really help them, I think, is I think the two cornerbacks are going to go as well.
Yeah.
And so that takes some of the steam out of this, you know, perfect scenario. If they get Derek Stingley and they get it, you know, all pro years out of him and live happily ever after.
Yeah.
But that pushes down, those tackles. They don't need those tackles. So where are those tackles going to go? They're going to go above them. So yeah, that helps them. Is there going to be two tackles that go above them, or three tackles that will go above them? So it's going to be, this is kind of a, and there's a lot of variables every year, but this sort of feels like more so because you don't have that one, or I think you got great players up there, but you don't have those quarterbacks that are just taking up the first three spots like last year.
So despite the fact that I don't know that Kellen Mond is going to work out here, and the Vikings do need perhaps if Kirk doesn't win the Super Bowl, I think there's a need there to build that QB of the future. That need coupled in with him dropping is not enough for you to grab Patrick. Is it what's his name? Willis.
Malik Willis.
Sorry.
I don't think so, because everything that they've done, has kind of been for this year. I contradicted myself a little bit, but if they took a receiver at 12, I know I talked about it being for down the road, but if it's not the Alabama guy that's hurt and he might not be back, that's a different story. But if you take a receiver, you can still line up three, and you can still line up four receivers now and work with where you put Irv and all this stuff. So to get a quarterback, that's not going to play for 2 years or 3 years, doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah.
Because and then you also, they're also looking at who's available next year, who's available maybe the year after that. I personally don't know. I couldn't name a quarterback that's coming out next year, to save my life. So, maybe next year is a good quarterback year. That weighs into whether if you're in the Vikings situation, do you take a quarterback?
Well, I'm looking up, and I put up on my other computer screen here, the last mock by PFF, which popped just before we came on. And it's got the Minnesota Vikings taking one of your guys, Garrett Wilson from Ohio State, a receiver. And it says Wilson may be the single most dynamic receiver in the class, and that's something the McVay offensive tree is built to take advantage of. So
he's a guy that plays inside, plays outside, and he's that versatile guy. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's that versatile. Yeah, I mean, he'd be a wonderful 12th pick.
Well, that's what PFF says. So let's dive into what Mark Craig says. Mark, like as I said earlier in the broadcast, Mark put together his annual mock draft for the Star Tribune, and it would be out tomorrow. Correct, sir.
Yes, it probably dropped today at some point.
Give me maybe an overview with a couple highlights, and then tee up who the Vikings are going to take at 12, if you'd be so kind.
I mean, probably a lot of people, I have no idea, but a lot of people see it this way. The top edge rusher is the best position in this draft, and I think the top three guys are going to be edge rushers. And people are going to get three really good players. Now, number three, Houston is a little, you don't quite know what they're going to do. I would assume if Aiden Hutchinson isn't there, it doesn't go number one. Detroit is going to take about three seconds to pick the Michigan kid number two. So, yeah. And then I think edge rusher is a position to Lovie Smith and the Texans need. I got two quarterbacks going in the top. I just don't know how in today's game, the Panthers don't take a quarterback. I got them taking Kenny Pickett from Pittsburgh. The Falcons, I think Malik Willis is a guy that could play with the Falcons. I mean, he's a guy that's got the skill to kind of be your gadget guy this year. And then Marcus Mariota is a 1 year guy. He's, you know, he's not going to be around forever. You know, Atlanta last year decided, you know, they had the fourth pick overall last year. They could have had the fourth of those five quarterbacks coming out. They could have had Fields, or they could have had, you know, Mac Jones. They decided, you know, one more year with Matt Ryan, and they took a great tight end, number four. Well, now, you know, they're one of those teams that's desperate for a quarterback. So you have those two guys coming in. Where I think Derek Stingley goes is number four to the Jets.
Hmm.
Derek Stingley, first of all, he's healthy. I think he's proven that he's healthy. He's got that game. He's got that season from 2 years ago that's off the charts. Fantastic player. It's there. I mean, NFL teams are always, you know, like, you know, I know he didn't have the best, you know, last 2 years health-wise, playing-wise, but neither did LSU. I think the NFL looks at this and says, this is a guy that can be a top five talent. Plus, the Jets are looking at, you know, Stephon Diggs twice a year, now Tyreek Hill twice a year. The Jets need a deep, they need defense. You know, and you got the Jets having, what, two of the top 10 picks. You know, they could come back with an edge rusher, that Jermaine Johnson, that kid from Eden Prairie.
That's what PFF has, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that he's one of the fastest rising guys, according to, you know, the PFFs and everything. And, you know, he's got the track record, and it appears that people, you know, are impressed with his work ethic and everything like that. The Giants, you know, they probably take that Cincinnati corner at number seven, and then they get to come back. Or they're five, so they can get a tackle from Alabama, Evan Neal at number five. And then they come back and get a corner, you know, fantastic, you know, 6'3" corner at seven. So this is a draft that eight teams, a quarter of the league, doesn't have a first round draft pick.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
So that means that you have 1/4 of the league is, unless they trade and like and get back into the first round, they're done. You know, it's kind of becoming the Rams' way. You know, the Rams haven't had a first-round draft pick in forever, and they won't have one forever now. Their last first-round draft pick was Jared Goff, and they've given up.
They do have one thing, a Super Bowl trophy.
Yes, exactly. So it's monkey see, monkey do. And, you know, there's some talk about Trayvon Walker going number one overall. I don't see him making it past number three with the Texans. You know, then I got like seven receivers, seven edge guys going in the first round. The receivers don't start going until Washington at number 11. And then it's, you know, gets kind of rapid fire from 11 to 19. Wilson, I got going to the Texans at 13. I could see the Vikings taking that. But as far as the Vikings, here's the, you know, with the two corner, I've been saying Stingley for a long time, like everybody else. I just don't think he'll be there, and I don't think that at 12 you take the third best corner. Now, Ben Gessling from our paper, he does all seven rounds, you know, of the Vikings picks, and he's been got a pretty good track record in picking. I think he had Irv Smith in the second round, that nailed that 1 year. I think might have nailed Brian O'Neill as a pick, two in the second round. I don't get the first round pick right almost every year. He's got him trading down and taking the corner from Washington, Trent McDuffie. I didn't do a trade down. I want to see what I think they'll take it at number 12. And I love the Jordan Davis, the defensive tackle from Georgia. I think one of the needs that doesn't seem to get much love right now is that, you know, that defensive line. It's a new defense, a three-man front. Right now you have, you have Harrison Phillips from the Bills. He was their first, there's their prize free agent signing. Does he play nose? Is he big enough to play the nose? Does he play one of the tackle end positions? He's going to do one or the other. And then you, Dalvin Tomlinson, he could play the nose or he could play one of the end positions. And now this guy is Jordan Davis. I mean, number 99 from Georgia. If you watch Georgia play at all, I mean, he's a massive guy. He's quick. He can play any one of those three positions and be a starter. And he's going to make those guys behind him better. He could be a potential that game wrecker in there. And it's a great spot to take one of those trench guys that could really be a difference maker long term. So that's who I have. You know, it's, I don't know how many people have him going. I know some have talked about him being a guy that's a possible number 12 pick, but I'll probably be wrong. But I think that guy would look fantastic in the Vikings.
Well, PFS got him going to the Ravens at 14, and I'm just looking in my other, you know, I've been subscribed to Sports Illustrated my entire life, and I'm not sure that I agree with them anymore on a lot of stuff, but I don't even see him on here, but I'm not looking very closely. But that's quite the pick, Mark. I got to give it to you. It'd be interesting to see a hit on that. I, after talking to you this entire time, I've actually been swayed to pick Jordan Davis because I don't know about him, and I was kind of pleased with what they already did on the defensive line. But I'm leaning towards the receiver now, and here's the reason why. Because you know that the Packers are going to be looking for receivers this year after losing Davante Adams, and I don't want – you know, if the Vikings take one away, that takes one out of their – a bullet out of their gun, so to speak. So for no other reason, that might be the way to go. And then, you know, maybe with your 12th pick in the next round, you can still get a decent cornerback or something. But
what if they take one, a bad bullet out of their route? What if they take a Laquan Treadwell out of, wouldn't you have rather had Laquan drift over to Green Bay?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would have. That's true. Yeah. That brings us right back to the point. That's a crapshoot, Mark.
Yes, it is.
It's crapshoot, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I mean, so now that's when you're doing your mock draft, you're thinking, are you saying this is what will happen or this is what should happen?
That's a good point. I should probably do that. What should happen? That way you can hide behind, I don't know. It's a guess. It's trying to, you know, needs versus like, you know, impact. And if it falls down, the one thing that even I have a hard time swallowing, if this plays out, I don't have, I'm drawing a blank. I do not have Kyle Hamilton. I don't have Kyle Hamilton. I have him on the board at 12. Now he could be, he could go as high as number two to Detroit.
He has been all over.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think it's one of those deals. I think he ran a bad 40 time. Mm. And to me, it's, you can get caught up in that, but also, I look back, in 1999, a receiver from Florida State, coming out, he went number five overall. Everybody was like, oh, he's a surefire guy. Peter Warwick. And there was that national championship game at the Sugar Bowl on the Millennium was Michael Vick against Peter Warwick. Mm-hmm. Well, Warwick ran a bad 40 time, and the people just, it's game speed. You know, just look at how he plays. And when he got in the NFL, he wasn't as explosive. So sometimes you look at how they play, but the 40 times can make a difference. I know that they're trained how to run the 40 and stuff like that, but there seems to be some question about whether the kid from Notre Dame has the speed. If he does, he sounds like he can do it. He's 6'4", 220. Sounds like he can. He's like Harrison Smith, only a more modern version of like being able to play up at the line, be able to play back, be able to do all these different things. He's as big as some of the linebackers that are in this draft. I think he's as big as the Georgia linebacker, Dean, the Kobe Dean. So it's like he's a modern sized linebacker size with safety skills. So he could be a guy that could be top five, or he could still be on the board at 12. And that would be a hard guy to pass up.
Yeah,
because that to me is a need. That would be a need. You'd be getting the best safety in the draft. You put him right next to Harrison Smith, and that would be impressive. So I even made note of that. I was like, this guy's still on the board. It's a hard one to pick up, pass up, but I just like the the possibility of them getting so much more bigger physically, bigger, more physical, and stronger up front on that defense, and just having a guy that can dominate up there as opposed to just kind of getting by. And because right now, you know, your starter would be, I would assume, would be Armon Watts, you know, as that third guy. And that's just, and that's never mind that there's no depth behind those guys. So that to me is a bigger position of need than people are giving it credit.
I would have to agree with that last statement there. Yeah, it probably is. Cause that has I've not seen that anywhere else. I'm looking at this PFF and I see McDuffie going to the Eagles at 15, right behind the Vikings or shortly thereof. So I don't know if he's going to be around there later, depending on how far Ben Gessling would have him drop down. So I'm thinking if he's there at 12, they're going to grab him. And I'm trying to give my pick. I think if McDuffie's there at 12, they'll take him. And even though I'm starting not to lead towards another receiver just because it ticks off Packer fans, but who knows? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Ben had him taking him at 14 with a trade with the Ravens. So,
oh, really?
I don't think McDuffie will drop too far. But I don't know. And part of it just feels like, you know, we've talked cornerback for so long. It's like, it's never just what we all talk about. Oh, it's going to be a cornerback, and it's a cornerback. There's got to be some surprises. There's going to be something different, something unusual, which is why everyone tunes in, I guess.
Which is exactly right. And this one's going to be surprising. And therefore, we're going to be back next week to discuss what the Vikings did wrong all throughout the draft because they didn't agree with you or me or anybody. No, I have no idea. But we will be back that next week. We'll put together a draft recap, and it'll be fun because they have, like you said, 8 picks starting tomorrow night, Thursday, with the first round, and hopefully they keep it, and it's something fun to watch. And then we'll quickly turn over to the Timberwolves to see how they're doing. Given that, it's there you go. Check out Mark's mock draft in the paper later today or tomorrow morning and get more of his insight. And come on back next week and we will rehash the 2022 NFL draft and how the Vikings did. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to you, Mark. Thanks to Mike. And thanks to everybody else. And we'll talk to you next week. And until then, skull.